You have to answer for this nerd podcast mafia, Dave. You fingered her podcast to be associated with Dork of All Trades and Geek Yogurt?
Ben, you got it all wrong.
Ah, that little farce you played with old Johnny. You think that'll fool the beard?
It's innocent. I swear on our podcast.
Sit down.
Please, the Nerd Podcast Mafia. They're good people. A respectable group of like-minded podcasts that support and promote each other. I listen to So Wizard and Fans on Patrol all the time. And there are a number of other great podcasts in the mix. Just check them out at nerdpodcastmafia.com for yourself.
You make me an offer I cannot refuse.
Thank you. Now leave the cape. Take a cannoli.
Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event, able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host Dave.
And John.
And there's no Ben. What'd you do with him?
The beard, like, just rebelled, took over, and now he's looking for someone called Sarah Connor. I don't know.
Okay. That explains that weird smell he left me. So, ladies and gentlemen, yes, Ben is off this week again, so we actually have a good replacement for him. How's that sound? he is a fellow podcaster. He does a podcast called the Pop Anime Comics Lounge, which you can find at popanimecomics.com. And it's Andrew Davis. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you for having me on. I'm glad to be replacing Ben.
Yes. Ben's probably not happy about it, but.
We didn't say replace.
filling in. Yes.
It's okay for Ben, but if the beard hears, I don't want to deal with that. Not again.
So before we get into the topics for tonight, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about your podcast and how it came about?
So my podcast is the Pop Anime Comics Lounge, and I didn't see anything in the market of podcasting where people interview voice actors, comic book writers, professional wrestlers, and cosplayers. I said, why not? And that's kind of how it started, and I kind of just jumped in. And it actually started at an anime con where I met a very famous voice actor, Chuck Huber, and he was my first interview that I did. That wasn't exactly a podcast, but it kind of introduced me along the way. Mm. And for those who don't know who Chuck Huber is, he's Android 17 and this little runt called Hiei from Yu Yu Hakusho. So that's kind of how it started, and then it just evolved from there. And almost every week now, I'm releasing either a comic book writer, a comic book artist, a voice actor, a bunch of cosplayers, as well as professional wrestlers. And it's just an amazing ride, and I just love doing it. And each week I'm getting better and better guests.
Cool. Yeah, I started listening to your show. You've had quite a few impressive people on your show that we haven't even gotten yet. So, you know, you're doing something right and we're not. I blame John. But, you know.
Hey. I managed to interview, Barbara Dunn and Lindsay Jones from Ruby. I mean, you know, I got some voice actors, too. We're trying. Marina Sirtis.
No, I mean, see, the people you pick up in the alley behind the convention don't count.
Oh, is that how it works?
Yes.
I wasn't sure. Okay. Nice catch, by the way. Yu Yu Hakusho, I remember that one.
Oh, it's an amazing show. It's wonderful, and it goes back old school.
Yeah, it's one of the staples, you know? For the older crowd, I think the newer crowd still knows about it only because it's like, okay, what's the base? Macross, Yu Yu Hakusho, Dragon Ball Z, Sailor Moon. You know, I could probably count like maybe five more, but that's about it, really.
Yeah, no, all these anime fans. I mean, there's all these new shows out there, and they're fantastic. I mean, I'm a big anime fan, but it's the staples that really made the new shows work. And a lot of people understand, like, I do a very famous panel on sports, and we go back to, like, the 1980s and the 1990s, and what most people actually don't realize is that it's the same show being redone in 2015 that was done in 1993. It's just newer animation, and there's maybe a slight variation, but Slam Dunk and Kuroko's Basketball are legitimately if you put them on top of each other, they're the exact same shot.
So they're pulling a Helsing, because they're, you know.
Pretty much.
Cool.
You can jump anytime you want, Dave. I know you watch a lot of anime.
No. See, I know that's your realm. That's why I'm staying back. You know, I have a feeling you two could probably talk the entire hour about old school anime.
That's a great idea. How about you go talk to your wife about Carfax, and we'll just carry on a conversation. I'm glad you thought of that.
Yes. No. There's other things we need to talk about. We can talk some anime, sure, but you know, the big thing that just came out, like the other love of your life, Star Wars.
Yeah.
They just released the new trailer.
Yeah.
Do you have opinions on it? Did you watch it?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, I think it's a big spoiler. They shouldn't have let us know that Luke Skywalker is a Sith Lord now. you know. So I'm really disappointed in that. I think trailers just give away too much these days.
Yes.
And way before the movie comes out. What do you think?
Well,
I don't really get much out of the trailer, except that there's going to be a bunch of cool star fights and we're done with the X-Wings, which makes me happy. Because there's more to Star Wars than just an X-Wing fighter. There are B-Wing fighters instead.
Right. No, I agree.
Y-Wings, too, if I remember correctly.
Well, and the U-Wing. Don't forget about the U-Wing.
Yeah.
Apparently they only had one, and once it was destroyed, that was it. I mean, there's a lot of fan theories obviously going around about this movie, in particular that line that you must be referring to, John, of it's time for the Jedi to end, with the concept of when there's Jedi on one side and Sith, or, you know, whatever they're calling them now, Knights of Ren on the other side, that there isn't a balance. Because it's split.
Well, that's the thing, you know, and we should have asked Peter David about this at the Comic-Con, because that is the one thing that the extended universe never got around to after, was it the Yuuzhan Vong and all, invading the universe, and all this backstory about the Sith Lords and all the children always turning evil because writers sometimes suck and can't come up with a good idea, and so they have to ruin families to do it. They never got around to explaining, okay, what the hell was the balance that the Skywalker family was supposed to introduce to the Force? They never got to that. Maybe finally, now that Disney's in charge, we're going to get that up front so we know what the hell's going on.
Maybe. Or maybe he turns into a mouse at the end. No.
Also a possibility.
Yes.
I mean, my take on it is that I don't really see why there has to be Sith and there has to be Jedi, because we saw that Finn, and I think it's aiming that you know, Rey is kind of, you know, going to be inheriting the lightsaber and going to be undergoing the training, but Finn was controlling the lightsaber out of rage in Force Awakens. So why does it have to be that, you know, why can't anybody wield it? And, you know, maybe we don't need Jedi and Sith anymore. Maybe there's a third classification, and maybe, you know, it is. Anybody can pick up a lightsaber as soon as they get angry, but they don't have to be classified as a Jedi anymore. Maybe, you know, it's something along those lines, where maybe instead of this entire position where Sith are evil and on one side and Jedi are on the other, maybe you could have kind of a Sith or somebody who's half Sith who disagrees with the Jedi, or vice versa. And then you have a whole new range of everything. It becomes even more, and it becomes more of you pick your side and you basically have team sorts. And so, I mean, that theory is kind of a little bit convoluted, but maybe we're just breaking these alliances apart and something's going to hit the fan. And then everybody's kind of their own representation.
Well, I think they could do that by clearing up the one big plot hole that has followed Star Wars its entire existence.
Uh-oh.
Which is, what the hell makes the Sith Lords evil? When you give into anger, do you suddenly become evil? Is this a force thing? Like there's a switch? Because, you know, human beings do not normally just say, well, I'm going to act out in anger. Oh, I think I want to take over the world now. You know, there's a nuance to human personalities. So there should be somebody, you're right, there should be somebody who, there's no real classification of Jedi or Sith. It's just, hey, I'm in this situation, and force lightning seems to be the way to go at this point. So I'll just use force lightning and then use my lightsaber to block over here. But I don't want. I don't suddenly feel like I need to murder people and take over the universe. You know, it's just if they could ever explain what the trip was for becoming a Sith Lord, why that was such a black and white thing, explain it by bringing up something like midichlorians or this, you know, this guy named Lucas back in the day, you know. I'd like to know that, because if they can explain that, then they can go on with the story of, yes, there are evil people with the Force, there are good people with the Force, and there are people, and there's all shades of gray, and you don't have to be evil to use Force lightning, and you don't have to be good and not do bad stuff.
Okay, so number one, your first argument saying people giving in to anger doesn't make them evil. Obviously, you haven't been paying attention to politics in the last 30 years. Secondly, yeah, you're right. I don't think they ever really explained it. Because in a lot of, in the simplicity of the movies, they make it seem black and white. You know, like, as soon as you give in to anger, you'll become evil. And you're right. Like, it's something Lucas probably never thought through and just did it. The other thing I took from the trailer is Finn going to be in a coma the whole time, floating around in some kind of bed. I thought that was really weird that, like, they just showed that they showed him unconscious, laying down. Like, that didn't make any sense to me.
I think that's what they call a plot device.
Oh, that is that how that works? Okay.
Yeah. Well, what we need is the Jedi equivalent of Batman. Lawful good does not exactly mean lawful nice.
True, but he's more lawful neutral.
Yeah, but that's just it. Show me a lawful neutral Jedi.
Well, I can't. They're
exactly.
They're more like Paladin. So, oh God, are we gonna go that nerdy with this? Anyway,
no, that's a different podcast. That's
I don't want to beat the trailer to death. It's been done time and time again.
Is that why Finn is unconscious?
It got me. I will say it did get me excited. Some people were saying that they didn't feel any differently. I liked seeing Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker again, so that got me excited for the movie. I definitely want to see it. Of course, the other thing that I want to talk about relate to that trailer or relate it to the movie itself. We only saw Carrie Fisher's back.
Yes, Carrie Fisher is back. Thank you.
But Carrie Fisher is going to be definitely is going to be in The Last Jedi. Like, that's confirmed. She filmed all her stuff. But will she be in Episode 9, which is the question. It had come out like a week and a half ago. Both her brother and her daughter said they had approached them and said they wanted to use some recycled footage for the finale, for Episode 9. And so they
assume, they're not killing her off in 8 then.
But then during Star Wars Celebration, the Lucasfilm came back and said, "Oh no, she's just in Episode 8. She finishes off her story in Episode 8." So, we'll start with our guest host, Andrew. What do you think? Do you think number one, do you think they're going to bring her back and this is just them trying to misdirect, and do you think they need to bring her back in Episode 9?
So there's two things, and one of them is that it's possible that they can bring her back. So that's a possibility. So it's not like we're in an impossible position not to bring Carrie Fisher back, just with recycled footage, as well as we've seen with film technology. And I mean, another movie that's just was released doesn't have Paul Walker in it, but Fast and Furious has actually spoken about doing Paul Walker digitally, and they also finished that digitally as well.
Right.
And Rogue One has some digital actors placed into it. So it's physically possible that he can do it. So I think that actually leaves open the possibility. And then if her estate's okay with it, I think that that's also kind of hints that she will be in Episode 9 in some capacity. And then it's just a matter of whether Disney and Lucasfilms feels comfortable enough and they feel like it's in really good taste, considering that she died and passed away, and then her mother died like 2 days later. Mm-hmm. It's not exactly, hey guys, this is friendly, and it's kind of one of those things that is it too soon type of thing.
Right.
And so that's the thing, and I think that they're going to have to figure that out based on how the reception is of her in Episode 8. And that's something that they're going to have to figure out. They're going to have to figure out, do they need her in the movie? Do they need her to sell the movie? Do they need her name? Do they want to pay tribute? Do Star Wars fans going to go be really happy with it, or are they going to be really upset with it? And how will that affect the bottom line? Because these movies have a lot of money in them. And I don't mean to make it an economical thing.
No, no.
And go down that route, but I think that's what it's going to boil down to, is really economics, is that what value or what value does it take away? And so I think that that's what's going to wind up happening, is that they're going to make a decision based on 8. And it might say her story arc is done in 8, but you could always add on, you can always throw that little caveat in there, kind of what Fast and Furious has done. And I mean, that's just on my mind, because they do it really well, where they've legitimately continued that story from the second one, has legitimately built the other 6. And so they could throw something in there that leaves the door a little bit open, but also kind of shuts it. And she could have some based on how the reception is of her, as well as, you know, just the entire Star Wars universe really being with her. And then also there still might be talks with her family and her estate about what exactly is going to happen. And that also complicated. So that's how I feel on it.
So what you're saying is, as long as they're not doing it for the sake of capitalizing on her death, and they're doing it because it's a storyline that she would have approved of and she would have wanted to do, it's fine.
Yeah, and I guess that, who knows, maybe they'll throw a lot of money at the estate and her family will just jump on it. I don't really know. I mean, that's a big possibility. We're at a stage, and I don't mean to think that people are bad, but, you know, money does dictate a lot of things, and it does dictate decisions. And we've seen that with other movies, especially with Marvel and Disney. I mean, that they're not the group that's known for necessarily dealing the best way with that. And they've done it with several other films, and money has changed several things with them. And so that's a possibility. But I personally would love to see her in episode 9. If it's done the right way, and if it's not done just for the money, it's done more for the legacy.
Right.
Because I think that it would be a really nice thing, even if it's just like an epilogue thing. And, you know, she doesn't have to be a big part of that, but I would at least like to see a cameo, if not a bigger part, because I think it can be done. I don't think it's that hard to do, and I think that they can find a way on how to do it. It's just a matter that it has to be done the right way versus for the wrong way.
Right, right. And I totally agree. You know, and that's the thing. You brought up a great point about the money thing. You know, I mean, there's fans that are going to get upset and scoff at those kinds of comments, but at the end of the day, it's a business. You know, it's the movie business. They're there to make money, and as much as they want to entertain us, they want to make sure the movie makes money. So it's that delicate line of, is it in good taste versus are we doing it, you know, just to make money, and then that would turn off fans from going to see it. But as from a purely fan's point of view, and we talked about this when she passed away, was, you know, it was a sudden thing. You know, it wasn't like, it's not like she was sick and people knew this was going to happen. So obviously there was a plan for her in these movies, and it's come out that there's supposed to be a big confrontation between her and Ben Solo in episode 9, that now they're going to have to change in some way. And I'm sure the fans don't want, you know, the legacy of this character. You know, there's one of the big, not only sci-fi icons, but a big icon in the sense of female empowerment. You know, people don't want her to die off screen. And just to mention, oh yeah, her ship blew up flying here. You know, like, that just doesn't seem like a good ending to her legacy. And it is a delicate balance. And I'm sure John has controversial opinions about that.
No. excuse me. No, I think you're right. I mean, there are so many ways this could go wrong. So, you know, I'm just worried that it will go the way of, hey, they threw money at us, and so we force the writers to fit this in, and of course it gets, I don't know. I'm with Andrew on this.
Right. No one wants an Uncanny Valley Carrie Fisher in this for 2 hours. So, all right. And moving on to happier news, how's this for a segue? We got the Thor Ragnarok preview that came out. And now I really enjoyed it. I loved it. I think this is a great tone, a good direction for them to go with the series. I have heard some negative comments about it, being that it's too campy. It goes against Thor, and it's, you know...
What?
Yeah.
Did they see the first movie?
And it's not, you know, it's not serious enough, you know, dealing with the destruction of Asgard, and now you've got him making jokes about, oh, he's a friend from work. So what do your guys take, John?
I think his roommate rubbed off on him. it's hard sometimes to get the feel of a movie from the clips that they pick for these trailers.
Right.
And sometimes they pick clips that kind of mislead you. And I think this is one of those times. I mean, I like the fact that they inject humor, and Marvel, you know, is at this point, that's one of their main rules, is they're not ever going to be dark and gritty, because they already know where that ends up.
Yes.
So they're going to have humor in their movies. And I'll tell you, at the end of that trailer, when he said that, I died laughing. And that's okay, because if the rest of the movie is dark, and, you know, and there's some really heavy moments, it's okay to break it up with humor at the right times. And that looked, that was pretty much, you know, that was, I liked that one. That was a good one. And then have, you know, the whole, you know, roar, and then, you know, go at him. Yeah. So I now want to see what happens. I don't know. The way trailers have been going these days, you either get an entire movie or you get just enough to really interest the movie, and I'll wait to see. But it looks good to me so far.
No qualms with them destroying his hammer?
Oh, destroying the hammer? No, that was Hell that did that. Yeah, that's well within her power.
I know. There's a lot of people complaining about that too.
Yeah, but there's precedent for him going to the dwarves, getting more metal and forging a new hammer or reforging Mjolnir. So, you know, that's, and if this is Thor Ragnarok, this is one of those times when that would happen. It's not like the Star Trek reboots, where the very first thing they do is destroy now they're destroying the ship every freaking movie. So, you know, it's okay. If that's going to set the tone for what happens in this movie, okay.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not much of a Thor fan. I like Thor the comics. I thought that the first Thor was great. I didn't think the second movie was great, but this one looks really good. I mean, I was skeptical going into the trailer and watching it, and when I saw it, I was like, oh, you know what it is? This looks good. This looks pretty good, and especially considering that he wasn't in Captain America Civil War. You know, that also is reassuring that we just had that movie coming out, and then we also had him appear in Doctor Strange, and now this kind of fits in a little bit into that, because that first scene in the trailer, when he's with, you know, Helva, and she's breaking the hammer, that's that scene from Doctor Strange. Like, that takes place right after. And so it's really nice to fit everything together, which I think Marvel's doing really well with. And I don't know how many people actually analyzed and looked at that trailer and really took it all in, but that trailer kind of plays into that movie, and now we're starting to see how the entire world is being built. And I think that's a really, really cool component to the trailer that Marvel did. And then just the friends from work thing was perfect. I mean, the Hulk and Thor are just wonderful. And it looks great. And the entire thing with the champions, it's just going to be fantastic. It's really going to be interesting how it plays out. I kind of think the idea is somewhat childish, but knowing that they got the humor in there and knowing that we're kind of entering this entire, I guess, rock phase and all, like the Infinity Gems stuff, which I don't know much about. It should be really good to see how that all plays out. And then that should be interesting to see how that plays out after Thor with the two Avenger movies that are supposedly coming out. So I'm really curious how this movie impacts everything else, more so than the movie by itself.
Right.
No, yeah, we're starting to tie it all together now, right?
Yeah, yeah, no, and so the possible spoilers. I'm not saying this is ever going to happen. The prevailing theory, and it kind of makes sense based on the clues that have been giving, is that the final gem, the final stone, Infinity Stone, is in Heimdall, or he possesses it somehow, which is the Soul Stone, and it makes sense. It's what allows him to see the 6 trillion souls over the. Or 9 trillion souls over the 6 realms. And they've already done this too. Whenever people are in possession of one of the Infinity Stones, their eyes glow the color of the stone. And Heimdall's eyes do occasionally glow orange, which is the color of the Soul Stone. So.
I'll buy that.
Yeah. So that's the prevailing theory is the final, stone will be, discovered in this movie. And, the theory that I like that they're going to go with is Helena is actually going to end up in possession with it. So Thanos teams up with her, to get it for the gauntlet. Just like in the original, Infinity, gauntlet storyline, he was trying to, coax Lady Death, you know, he was trying to court her. And so that's why he wanted the gauntlet was to impress her. And, I don't think they have the rights for the Lady Death, because I believe she's tied up in the Deadpool rights.
Oh, so, right. She would be. Aww.
So Helena will take the place of Lady Death in the Infinity War. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. If that's the way they go, it could just, you know, again, these are fan theories. Nothing is written in stone, or yeah, Infinity Stones.
That'd be kind of a stretch. Plus, you know, not only would that be a major departure from the current continuity, but there's also the fact that they're kind of like they're kind of plugging in Hulk's what was the name of that
movie? Planet Hulk
yeah, yeah. Planet Hulk, they're kind of putting that in there too, so right. I think this is going to be a completely original story with only elements from the other stuff, but not I think Planet Hulk could have been in and of itself a full movie. Oh, yeah. And it would have been fun.
Yeah, it's like taking elements from The Dark Knight Returns and giving us Batman v Superman. Yeah.
That was, yeah, after a toxic bath and never mind. Just don't bring that up again.
And you're the DC fan.
Yes, I am. I'm being.
But yeah, so it's interesting. Because again, Andrew, you kind of hinted this. I agree with you too that the second Thor movie wasn't that great. The villain's kind of forgettable. There's not a lot of, the story doesn't seem to have a lot of good tension, and it doesn't really feel like it fits in with the rest of the Marvel movies. So, and it's a little darker, you know, than the rest of the Marvel movies, which you talked about, John. I guess you read ahead in the articles that
I read something.
Kevin Feige has come out and has, basically stated that the Marvel Cinematic Universe will never go dark like the DC Extended Universe.
That's because it's all the box office receipts. It's a dark way to go.
You agree with that, Andrew? Like, do you think always being lighthearted and fun is
not always best? Fun. They're not always lighthearted and fun.
That's hard, because we've seen DC go dark with the Batman trilogy. And maybe that's the exception, and maybe that's the black sheep in this entire world. And we see it with Watchmen too. And maybe those are exceptions, because for the most part, I mean, most comic movies have been lighthearted. But, you know, we also look at the X-Men, we look at some of the success that the X-Men has had. I mean, the X-Men has been a really wonderful, somewhat dark social commentary. I mean, X2 was a pretty dark movie. I mean, there was, like, kids were kidnapped, mutant kids were kidnapped. They were kind of the mansion, and then, you know, you get that scene with Iceman. No, not Iceman. Colossal, where the bounce off, and he's protecting the kids, and they Colossus, and they escape on the X-Jet. You know, you get that scene, but that's kind of a very dark movie, and it's insinuating that if they're not rescued, something's going to happen. And then we also get, you know, even Days of Future Past, I mean, shows a very apocalyptical, mutant-type world, where they're being hunted down. So, and that was a pretty, I don't know how well it did in the box office, but I don't think it was a failure. So I don't, maybe Disney and Marvel don't want to go down that because they have more than just a comic fan base. They now have license deals and they have an entire other set of products to worry about where the movie generates a lot of the revenue. But when you have, you know, selling the Spider-Man lunchbox to a kid, or maybe not the Spider-Man lunchbox, but maybe, you know, the Captain America lunchbox, you can make it dark like Christopher Nolan made Batman dark. And Batman is always a dark character. So maybe that's it. But I think they could go dark if they wanted to. And if it's done the right way, it would work. It's just a matter that they then have to figure out how to license all their products that they have in their entire segment. And it would be a headache for them.
Definitely.
It's hard to make Captain America dark. It's hard to make certain characters dark. I don't think that you can make Thor dark that we were just speaking about. It's pretty hard to do that. He's not a dark character. He's the Thunder. To make the God of Thunder dark, it doesn't work. Iron Man is somewhat of a cocky playboy. I mean, that's what Iron Man is. That's a really hard position to make dark. So I think a lot of Marvel characters are harder. But Doctor Strange, you could make that dark very easily. Mm-hmm. And then as we go outward, because Marvel's soon going to have to get outside of the Avengers and even the peripherals of the Avengers. And when they start diving into darker characters and outside and keep on expanding, I think we're going to start going darker. And I think that's what's going to happen, especially when the fan base, when the 12-year-old who's seeing Captain America is all into all these movies, and then when we get to Phase 5 or even Phase 6, if we even get that far, that 12-year-old is now going to be 19. And they're going to want something very different, and they're going to want something a little bit darker. And a little bit more mature. And yes. I think that's where we're going. Eventually we're going to get there.
You sound like you're describing the Harry Potter series of movies, where it started off whimsical and fun, and as it got older, along with the fan base that were watching the movies, it got damn freaking dark by the end.
I think they're going to have to do it that way, because I don't see how they can keep the... Because a lot of what's going on, at least what I witness, is that there's two trends that are going on in comics right now, where there's somebody like me who's 24, who's been reading comics for 6 years and got into it kind of by accident. And then there's this entire segment where they're trying to breed like the 6-year-old, the 7-year-old with kids comics and slowly raise the level. And that there's two things going on. And so somebody like me, who now is involved, understands the lightheartedness, but I also understand that the comics tend to be darker, and we have other companies that do darker work like Image. Mm-hmm. And then eventually that 6-year-old becomes an 18-year-old, and all throughout the process, the maturity level grows with them. And so I think that if they want to, in the next 10 years, really keep their fan base and not lose it to a company like Image, you know, they're going to have to go darker, because you can't have something like Captain America 1 where you're being Nazis. That wears off for you know, a 24-year-old after a while. It doesn't satisfy them completely. But while something like, you know, Batman Dark Knight completely satisfies an older audience. So I think it's going to go that way. But I always think there's always going to be lightheartedness as well. I think they're going to figure out the balance.
See, I don't think they have to worry about that. I mean, they don't have to go dark. I mean, a perfect example of this is you can have tension and some really not adult, but from some very bad consequences and bad situations, and you can still come out with Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm, to a point.
Well, yeah, but still, I mean, the Infinity War is going to get bad, and people might die.
Right.
But real human beings at that point are usually telling jokes in order to keep themselves sane. And so you're going to get some humorous
which
it's interspersed with the bad times. So,
Yeah, I mean, and you brought up the licensing, too. It reminds me of the 1991 Batman Returns fiasco. 91-92 with the Penguin being, you know, made very grotesque and dark in the movie, and they did licensing with Nichols and the Happy Meals, and like parents complained profusely about that, you know? So again, you also have that kind of delicate balance that they're always playing too, right? So, but I understand what you're saying about how the audiences grow up, and it's like, well, you know, what can you do? Look at, I think a great example of audiences growing up is the Power Rangers movie. You know, maybe it wasn't a blockbuster, but the concept of it was, they took the material from the original Mighty Morphin series, and they took it seriously and made a movie that I wouldn't say was dark, but was more gritty and more realistic and had more of a solid storyline to it to appeal to an older audience who liked it when they were kids, you know? So it's, yeah, it's like, I think, you know, they're going to have to find that balance eventually. So.
I mean, look at Batman, what happened in the 1960s and going way off. I mean,
yeah.
We won't. Podcasts that I think you were referring to was with Denny O'Neill, and he talks about this where it took DC almost 30 years to fix that. So to go from that campy style to making Batman dark again and really making it this character what he is, and now we're seeing the darkness in DK3 as well as several other comics, you know, it took a huge amount of effort to go from this campy style to being dark. So to play to, I think, John's point, I mean, once you go down that road, it's very expensive if you want to do it the right way. So, I mean, ultimately, I think at this point, Marvel is big enough that they can choose whatever path they want to go down, and that I think that they'll always find success. It's just a matter of which path they want to go down, how much they want to invest.
Right.
Yeah, and just remember, it depends on the character, too. Like, okay, yeah, Batman's dark. But he works best when he's in many iterations. He works best when he's in the Justice League and there's Wally West or Barry Allen sitting there cracking jokes at him. So, you know, there's got to be a balance, because you get too dark and gritty, and you're going to get Donnie Darko instead of, you know, a superhero movie.
So you're saying, like, when you make a Superman movie where that's dark with Man of Steel, how do you have him be the light compared to the dark Batman?
You don't do Man of Steel as dark. You do him as All-Star Superman, and then you've got your perfect balance.
Oh, darn it.
See? I've been listening to Comics Explained. I've been boning up. Go ahead.
All right.
Test me.
All right. And our last little piece of Marvel news. Because we talked about this in one of our last Hostfuls. Who's going to be playing Cable, and they've officially announced it, and it's going to be Josh Brolin, who's also playing Thanos.
So is this like the nail in the coffin for being that those two universes merge?
No, because then that doesn't make any sense, right? How can you have the same actor in the X-Men universe and in the Marvel universe? I mean, now granted, yes, he is CGI'd as Thanos, and he's purple, and I'm sure they're going to do something with his voice too, but... I don't know. Like, so
look like this.
Are you a Deadpool Cable fan at all? And what do you think of Josh Brolin playing Cable?
I got no issues with Josh Brolin playing Cable. I think it's going to be fine. I think it's going to be great. I think it's the type of thing where it can't be messed up. After the way Ryan Reynolds played Deadpool, I have complete trust in Deadpool 2. I really do, because I think that it's the type of thing where it's a really hard movie to mess up. I think anybody really, any reasonable actor that they picked would have been fine. So I have no complaints. I don't really care that he's famous in the X-Men universe. That doesn't influence me one way or the other. I just think it's going to be great. And I think that the role itself, for any reasonable jacked up actor, or they make jacked up and make somewhat intimidating, is going to be fine, because I just think it's written so well, Deadpool. And I think Deadpool 2 is going to be written so well that it's not mess upable, for lack of a better word.
True, true. I mean, and you know, Cable is your straight man to Deadpool in a lot of those stories. So, you know, any decent actor can fill the role, I think. So, like you said, they did such a great job on the first one. I do trust their judgment at this point.
Yeah, just remember that nothing is mess upable. Nothing is not mess upable because Zack Snyder exists.
Shh. Let's not mention him. It's bad as mentioning Zimmer. So, I mean, and it's not the first actor who's double dipped. I mean, Ryan Reynolds double dipped. He was Green Lantern, if we want to count that.
Even he doesn't want to count that.
There's a lot of actors who've done this over the years. So, yeah, I mean, I don't have an issue with the casting. I just, again, because we talked about this in one of our last episodes, I wanted to make sure we brought it up. So, cool. We look forward to that. And now a little bit of DC news. So this should excite John.
They're going to reboot Batman v Superman?
No. They're talking about releasing an animated Watchmen movie that is R-rated and many more R-rated animated films coming up.
Okay.
Because they had Obsessed with the Killing Joke, I guess, as an R-rated movie. And
if you listen to anybody in the comic world, not exactly a great success. I mean,
mild success. Mild.
I would hesitate to give it that much credit. Now, granted, with Watchmen, there is enough material to fill out an entire movie, and then some, actually. That could be like two or three actual full-length animated features.
Mm-hmm.
As long as they don't pull a Killing Joke and decide to add, some Batgirl action in there or something, I think it'll be fine. I mean, Justice League Dark turned out okay. I don't think that was rated R, though, but it was close. And I mean, people were getting slaughtered in that one, so, but it was still good.
Well, The Watchmen already had love triangles and weirdness in it, so, yeah, I'm right there. They don't need to add that. It already exists.
Yes, but somebody decided, as long as they, don't go off script or do it just for the sake of, hey, we got rated R.
Right. I mean, and I know Andrew is a huge R-rated animated movie fan. do you think of the idea of them doing an R-rated Watchmen animated film?
I like it. I like the idea, but I think it would be interesting because I know that they did motion a while back, and that was interesting in its own right. I mean, I'm not big into motion comics. I kind of think that it kind of is the exact opposite of what you would have in animated film. And that if you're going to do one or the other, you should do the animated film. So I think it would be cool. I think Watchmen is perfect for it. And I think it would be perfect in 3 parts. Really break down, really do it the right way. And really do it like the graphic novel was. And really deliver that in there. And even in the graphic novel, it was broken up and there were some prose sections. And I think it's interesting if they can incorporate that into it as well. Because I think that would be a very interesting interpretation on it. It would be something somewhat different. And so I think it can be done if it's done the right way. I mean, it'll be great. It's Watchmen. It has already such a name. I think it would be a great thing for DC to do, including those pro sections and really kind of doing part one, part two, and part three. And then just even from a business standpoint, keeping Watchmen active, keeping it alive, not any of that prequel stuff, but like the actual core original graphic novel that changed a lot of comic stuff. I mean, it's such a wonderful book. I think it's one of the only books that won a Hugo. And then they had to change it, the entire rules for that book. It could won a sci-fi novel award at a sci-fi convention.
Right.
After it won it, they couldn't like say, no, you're disqualified because you're a graphic novel. They had to change their rules. Changed it. So I think it would be a great addition to continuing that and pushing that forward. And introducing more people to Watchmen. And Watchmen, you can't dumb down Watchmen and you can't water it down. Every other title in DC can be watered down. Suicide Squad, Batman could be watered down. Wonder Woman could be watered down. Watchmen and V for Vendetta, I would also argue, are like the two that really can't be watered down.
Yeah. It occurs to me that the reason why they do a Watchmen at this point it's actually doing Watchmen right now is twofold. One, like you said, keep it alive because it's, one of their great properties. But number two, because with DC Rebirth, they are about to introduce the fact that Dr. Manhattan is the reason why Flashpoint went crazy, and they had to do Rebirth and to explain why the multiverse is all screwed up and how Wally West got erased and all that. So they're introducing Watchmen into the DC continuity now. So, you know, it's twofold. They're going to they can use the interest generated in a feature length Watchmen animated show to hustle people into the comic side of stuff and vice versa. It's called synergy.
I definitely agree with Andrew's take on it. Like, could be at least a 3-part series. I'd always kind of pictured it as a like an HBO miniseries, you know.
Yeah.
If they like, you know,
I'd be even better.
Yeah, like you could have a narrator doing the under the hood, the prose piece of it, and then you could have the images from the comic, the Pirates comic, floating through the scenes. You know, like all the layers that obviously were missing in the movie that we got. Again, Zack Snyder, right? Mm-hmm. Behind that movie?
Which
release? But I mean, and let's be honest though, no matter what they do, Alan Moore won't like it.
If he does, you know it's bad.
For those of you
listening, if you don't know, Alan Moore is one of the more interesting personalities in all of comicdom. He's definitely a genius. And in all ways, including the way he reacts to certain things about the stuff, the great work that he's done.
Yes. But it didn't lend my thinking though, when I read the article, getting back to the original point, besides Watchmen, like what other R-rated stories could they do? Swamp Thing, that was an R-rated animated movie. But John, you're the DC expert. Anything that you can think of?
I mean, the one of my head is Dark Knight and all that stuff with Frank Miller would be right up the alley, especially with what's going on with Frank Miller. You know, there's rumors that he's not doing great.
Right.
There's a major legacy thing. I mean, there's several scenes in the first Dark Knight that many people know, you know, with the swastikas and everything like that, where, you know, clearly you can't water that down all that much. And that would be a very interesting, you know, film. And then considering that now they're on part 3 of that, you know, I mean, you could do 1, 2, and 3, and fans would most likely want to see that and really want to see that done the right way. And just see how intense that gets, especially the showdown between Batman and Superman. Both of them would be well done because it's a very different Batman. It's a very different world. And so that's right off that I think would be fantastic. Rated R and completely no bar set up.
I swear, didn't I watch that though? Yeah, they did that already though. They did the animated Dark Knight Returns.
They
part
did
one
it
and
as-
part two.
Yeah, they did it as a 2-part story, but they did cut out a lot.
Oh yeah, they cut it out. They cut out the stuff where with the Reagan lookalike president and cut out a lot.
It was Reagan. The book was written in the 80s.
Yes, I know, but they cut out some of the stuff that kind of tied it to the fear in the 80s of big government and. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of the political stuff that was kind of washed out a bit. I forget what it was rated, though.
I mean, even just going back and just redoing it and doing it the way that Miller wrote it and drew it would be an amazing experience and really revisiting it. Because when you water something like that down that has such a legendary effect on Batman and having this kind of no-holds-bars type of Batman. I mean, it's a really wonderful thing to read that and know that it's out there and know that, like, we have this Batman who almost practically kills the Joker. I mean, that's something that you don't see that in the regular DC universe. You don't see such a deranged, I'm taking no prisoners Batman. And I don't know, I didn't see the part 1 and part 2 of that, but I would imagine they couldn't go as extreme as it is in the comic, and I would like to see that extremity myself. That's just my personal opinion.
Okay. How about you, John? Is there anything you can think of?
Well, I mean, they're already on track with Justice League Dark, because that side of things, you know, they could definitely do, well, Swamp Thing is one. Solomon Grundy has quite a backstory mm-hmm. a lot of stories they could do, given what Bruce Timm did with the animated series and the interaction between him and Hawkgirl. Definitely, I mean, Constantine, they've done some good work with him lately. He's chock full of stuff, of lines that they could follow. Book subject, Orpheus, it's coming to me. The Vertigo series did with with Death and a few of those icons. They could do that. Neil Gaiman did one. That has a lot of good stories too. And that that does tie in with the greater DC universe.
Yeah.
Sandman, that was it. Yeah.
Yeah,
because I mean, like in the first issue of Sandman, they had Sandman looking. I forget what he was looking for. One of his icons of power, and he visited the Justice League, it was John Jones that knew who he was, and I forget if it was Blue Beetle or Bruce the Gold. Who was that? And he said an old guy. But you know, there's a lot of tie-ins they could do with that. So yeah, there's a whole underlying universe. They've already tied up Lucifer with the TV series, so they probably don't want to do an animated version of that.
But I think you're right. I'll bet you. I'm willing to, now that you've brought up Sandman, I'm willing to bet money that is their plan. They're going to do a Sandman
animated. Well, you hope that's their plan, because that would be the smart thing to do.
Well, right. No need to be smart.
Sorry.
And on that note, I'm going to bring up this last article, and I brought it up because it involves one of yours and Ben's favorite actors, John. So it was a casting. This person is going to play. I don't even know how to say the name. I'm not an Aquaman fan. Nereus, Nereus, in the Aquaman movie, and it's the one and only Dolph Lundgren.
All right, finally.
And there's another great example of an actor double dipping, right? Because he was the Punisher in the 80s.
Again, even he doesn't want to remember that. I think he could do a good job with this.
Did you see Daddy? I mean, not Daddy Daycare. Kindergarten Cop 2? Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, you can treat a lot of that to the right. People forget that Dolph Lundgren, I think he's got like 2 PhDs or something. The man is freaking smart as hell, and he does have some acting chops. The only problem is that he's been handed some roles, and goddess knows why he took some of these roles. But, you know, he's had some roles that really just, you know, people kind of, you know, latch onto, and that's what they remember him for.
He's always going to be remembered as He-Man.
Yeah.
And I can tell by the smile on Andrew's face that he saw Kindergarten Cop 2.
A long, long time ago. It's a very interesting movie.
Well, I mean, I guess when you're 24, it's a long time ago. I think it might have been 2 years ago it came out on Netflix. And
it was a long time ago, 2 years ago.
it was one of those movies when I watched it, and my wife and I were bored one night. We put on Netflix and watched it. It was like, there were all these 80s movie cliches in there that was like, it made no sense. They had the captain who just yelled at him for no reason. And it was like, okay.
It was wonderful for so many of the wrong reasons. I'll paint a picture quickly. You're in college and it's a Friday night and you have a 12-pack. It's games.
Oh, there you go. That's the way to watch a movie.
You have to stop in the middle and go to a gas station.
So you think he'll do a good job in the in Aquaman?
I don't see why he wouldn't. I don't think it's that big of a role. I don't really know. I don't really care. It's the type of thing where I don't think I'm going to be going to see Aquaman for him.
Right.
It's just going to be more of a distraction. or not a distraction. It's going to be a bonus. Let me rephrase that. It's not the selling point of the movie. I'm going to enjoy seeing him in it, mm-hmm. but Aquaman looks like a badass. And also I'm going to go enjoy that movie because that's what it looks like. And it's going to be fantastic.
Right.
So, I don't really have an opinion on it. I'm sorry if it's your favorite actor, but...
It's not my favorite actor. He's just somebody I think has been very underutilized. And he's a pretty cool guy once you read up more about him.
Well, I think he probably fell into the role because for those who are watching Arrow, he was just on a story arc in the flashback stories where he was like a Russian enforcer, a Russian mobster that Stephen Amell, Oliver Queen gets involved with in the in his flashback. So I kind of feel like he was there, he was working with them, and they went, oh, you know what? You'd be great in the Aquaman movie. Phillips Brothers, second role. But yeah, and Andrew's probably right. It's going to be a small part. Going to be looking all tough underwater for a minute. So we'll see. You know, and I think we're a long way off before we even see previews for Aquaman. So I just thought I just brought it up because we've mentioned him a few times on the podcast. So I thought it was funny that he got cast in the movie.
Well. You know, that's fine. I agree with Andrew that it's not a very big part and that's not what you're going to see, but it is a bonus.
Yes. Cool. So, you guys have anything else you'd like to add before we wrap it up?
I just actually got booked for a con here in DC that I can announce.
Oh, okay.
All right.
So I'm in a very interesting panel where I'm comparing Attack on Titan, the anime / manga, to Fahrenheit 451 to The Walking Dead. So this will be a very interesting panel that's on the 16th to the 18th. I don't have a day exactly when I'm doing it or a time, but I'll be tweeting it out. It'll be on my website. But it's a very cool thing. So if you're in the DC area, just stay tuned. And it's called AwesomeCon. And it's a really good panel. Last time I did it, 150 people were in my room, and then 100 people couldn't get in because the room was small and they didn't have enough seats. So I'm hoping something like that happens again. But obviously, Attack on Titan is huge, Walking Dead is huge, and then Fahrenheit 451 is an amazing book. And that should be out there. It may or may not be streamed on my Facebook page. You can access that on my website as well. So definitely, I can't confirm nor deny. Draw your own conclusions. Legally, I can't say anything else about it. I'm not getting in trouble, but it might or might not be on Facebook. So definitely look there if you can't be in the DC area for it. And that's in June, so just stay tuned for that. And yeah, I mean, I got nothing else.
Cool. And so, again, people, they want to find you. It's popanimecomics.com, right?
It's popanimecomics.com, Pop Anime Comics Lounge. My Twitter is at popanimecomics. I'm on iTunes, and then my Facebook page is Pop Anime Comics. And if you can't find anything else, everything's on my website. It'll be up there. And definitely check it out, because I got so much cool stuff out there on my podcast. It's almost every week.
Yeah, because you got an interview with Danny O'Neill, and we didn't. I don't know, man. I don't know what's going on there. You must be related to him.
Danny O'Neill, Tom DeFalco should be coming out. Howard Cruz is up there. Trina Robbins was just released.
Cool.
Women's History Month. Who else do I have that's going to be out soon? And then I have Spike Spence, who is, for the anime fans out there, is Shinji Ikari from Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Oh.
So he's coming out. He's also Rolo from Code Geass. And he has a very interesting announcement on my podcast. And it's actually the first time he ever announced it, but I'm not going to ruin it here.
No, don't ruin it here.
We'll cut it out.
No. Stop. No, and I can tell by the look in his face, you've got a new fan. He'll be checking that one out at least.
Oh yeah, no, I know all these people that you're mentioning. I want to hear these interviews. And I also want to know all your secrets. Because you know, there's only so many times you can trip onto a star and get an interview with them before they start to get. You know, kind of, they kind of glom the games on.
Oh, stop, John. Stop. Stop being down on yourself. So, cool. Yeah, definitely. People, go check him out. It's a great podcast. A lot of great guests. And thank you for filling in for Ben this week. It was great.
Well, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
No problem. So,
yeah, anytime.
Yeah, anytime. So, as we say each and every week, boys and girls, don't let your kid get caught in the door. Have a good week.
Are you strong enough to stop a stupid movie rumor?
Are you more powerful than a bad comic book event?
Are you able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have got absolutely nothing better to do?
Then join the conversation by connecting with us on Facebook, Twitter, Slack, and other social media platforms.
And help us get our capes from getting stuck in the door by becoming an official Patreon patron.
And if you just want more content from us, don't forget to check out our website, where we post way more than we can discuss here.
So what are you waiting for? When you join our fight, everyone wins.